This is a production of Cornell University.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Wednesday, December 19th, meeting of the Employee Assembly. It is 12:20 p.m. Are there any late additions to today's agenda? Bridget? Okay, great. Thank you. So moving right along, since we have Mary here with us already, we'll skip approval of the minutes till after. Mary, talk.
I'm sorry, did I come early?
No, you're here right on time. So we'll go. No, you're our first piece of business for the day, so we'll just approve our minutes later. So Mary has joined us for today, and she's here to take our questions, answer anything that we have, sort of, that she can answer, right?
Uh-huh.
You'll answer what you can answer, right? So I know some folks emailed me some questions. Does anybody want to kind of jump in, or everybody's going to be really quiet? They did this to David at the leadership breakfast. So I'll jump in and I guess start out some of the questions that I can remember. I know someone had asked if you can give an update on Workday and kind of where that's at. I know it was supposed to be January 1st, but it's not now.
We delayed. So we don't have a firm go-live date yet. One of the things that we said when we started working with this system is that, as we know from all systems, they're very disruptive when you put them in. Even when they're done as well as they can be, they're just disruptive. It's different, new. When you think you've done a great job testing them, there's errors. So we weren't going to go up with it until we felt we had done the best we could in testing. And we had three sort of checkpoints. Was the system ready as it could be? Because it's going out farther than any system ever has before, so the campus world is ready as it could be. And were our integrations back to the system that we're going to integrate back to as ready as it could be? So when we checked in for the January go live, the system is pretty ready. Workday is a pretty good system. But the second two really weren't. We were rolling out the roles that the campus would see. We were rushing to get those roles, the last couple roles out. People were really rushing to put people in them. We really didn't have people completely well trained, and in a lot of cases, people will carry multiple roles, so they really hadn't figured out what it was going to feel like to have role after role after role layered on top of each other. And that's still going to be the case, that until you're live in the system, you're not really going to know what it feels like to approve this and approve that. But in some cases, they hadn't seen some of these roles in much detail. So we felt like that wasn't where it needed to be. And the integrations really weren't where we needed them to be at all. And since we're pulling the, this is the HR payroll system, we're pulling it out of PeopleSoft and then migrating back into PeopleSoft, and it's the data of record that feeds almost everything else. So boy, you really don't want to have that dangling there and have everybody go, oh, sorry, we needed that for this, it was just too risky. And then the real big thing was we weren't running clean payroll. The test payrolls had a lot of bugs in them. The payrolls were running dirty, which meant that we were going to have to run a lot of off-cycle checks. So when you look at it, it just wasn't worth putting the campus through another bumpy implementation. When you have the system that we've got, it's not a great system, but it runs a clean paycheck and people, this is the enemy that we know. So we just decided that we were rushing to go live when we didn't need to rush to go live. And we're tired, the team is tired, and we want to get up. And it's costing us a lot of money now to go this extra time period. But it wasn't worth it when we get a cost benefit now. So we're hoping to get up in the first quarter. But if it's still not clean, if the integration's not ready, we're not going to do it then either. So. It's just a much, much better system. So the biggest thing about cloud technology is that you run on a system that's housed elsewhere, which means that, and I'm going to try to say this in a way that isn't denigrating to people like me, but we, meaning the functional people that live inside of places, you are your own worst enemy. Because you customize systems, you do things to systems because you can. And then your resident technologist cannot keep the system up to date because you just can't help yourself. You're like an addict. Well, if you just tweak that over there, and if you just do this over here, and the end result is that you don't stay on the most up-to-date version of the system. You don't upgrade. When you're on a hosted system and software as a service system on a cloud system, you're all on the same version. You have to be. And so because of that, there are many, many fewer bugs. The system runs, everyone runs the same version. And the technology is the same. And if I had to tell you one thing, that's it. So what that allows you to do is push the system farther out. So it sits on many more desktops, and it has much more functionality. So right as it starts, it goes right out onto everybody's desktop. So when you go into your benefits, into running Workday, you're not in a bolt-on, or you're not in something that then feeds to somebody who has to feed it into something else. It's just a much, much better.
One other question about functionality. Will there be any capability in Workday to have sort of real-time labor dollar sort of statistics or information provided to the department head?
So that's a great question. So yes, you can. What it doesn't fix for us is it doesn't integrate finance data with people data. So it gives you a little bit more data insofar as it gives you payroll data connected to people and positions. What it doesn't do, though, is fully integrate all of your financial data with your people data, because that requires us to come back out of Workday, come back out of Kuali, go back into another system, and integrate that data. But you do get a little more. You get your people data connected.
So is that only once payroll's processed, or would you be able to go in there on a daily basis and look today what you spent yesterday and sort of labor dollars?
Yeah, you can see labor dollars right away.
You can?
Yep, in a report that you can get right online.
Oh, that's great.
Mm-hmm. And your spend. Anybody in your domain. Oh. So anyone you supervise in a little deal, anytime you want. And you can click on it. And then you can actually look at it, and you can change the way you see it. You can do a pie chart, or you can do a bar graph, or it's actually very user-friendly. It's surprising how easy it is. What we need, though, what managers need, is they need that data integrated. So what we really need to be able to do is pull that data, pull the finance data, pull the research data, integrate it all, and be able to give it to managers so that they can make decisions with it. And we're not quite there yet. It's a big step forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think just knowing what you're spending, I mean, for us to be able to tell that, you know, that constant, ever-changing information is really valuable for operations. So, that's great.
Stop in the right way.
Yeah.
a mulch or something is on the desktop right away. And it's real time, it's not warehouse data. And this is not perfect. So that's your day-to-day data. Because we're going to this data, your historical data is going to stick in a dead file. So it's going to take us a little while to marry those two. So like I said, I mean, I want to be honest about the fact that because we're going from the old system to the new system, when we have some linking up, that's going to take us a little bit of time. We'll eventually get there. So some of our reports will be a while. And it's all new. And we're just falling out of love with Chronos, which you can completely understand. So, you know, we're gonna stay with Chronos for now, but long term we're not gonna stay with Chronos. It's not going in a direction where we think that it needs to plug in, you know. So we'll probably upgrade it, but I think we're gonna look for work there for the time and we'll ultimately move all into the work there. We don't know that yet, but that's the thing.
Four.
No, so that's, I'm sorry, that is what we were just saying. Right now, we're looking potentially at first quarter, but what we've said is until we can minimize the disruption, recognizing that there will always be disruption, so we can minimize disruption, we don't want to set a hard and fast date. We have these sort of checkpoints on just how disruptive it will be. And if we can't get the noise down to a certain level, we're not going to do it. Now, that said, I'm doing this whole thing out of a quickly diminishing reserve because we're not getting any new money. So there will come a point when I don't have any more money in my reserve, and then we're going to have to set up our goal live here in July because there's no new money coming to the project. Well, we're getting there. And those who've seen it like it, mm-hmm. much better. It is a much, much better system.
So why does it cost so much money to ruin?
Because we rely on outside experts for some of the things that we just don't know how to do. Mm-hmm. That's really what the big cost comes from, is outside control. Almost everything else that we're and in some cases we're backfilling. So we have people in HR that are off on the project and we have chunks that we went back to. So it's not in the grand scheme of things a huge amount of money, but I think it's just on the margin. We're not a very wealthy department, so our reserves are pretty heavy. So it doesn't take long to deplete them.
So, Mary, other questions that have come through, some of them center around the engagement survey, and I know we've been talking about it a lot in here and people on various committees and getting updated, but one of the questions that came through is, you know, as we move from recommendations and they're reviewed by you and David and then start going to the implementation phase, who's going to do all the implementation?
Mm-hmm. That's a very good question. A lot of that depends on what the recommendations are.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen them. So, it's hard to say, because I don't know what they will be. I'm hoping that we'll be able to change from across the campus. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about this. I mean, some of it is HR work. And so where it's clearly HR, work with the HR. Where it's staff work, you know, where it's teams of people from across campus. I'm hoping it'll be teams of people from across campus. Where it makes sense to do it with outside consultants, if we can find the funding, that's the best way to do it, we'll do it that way. But I'm not trying to be evasive and go and keep us.
Everybody's really quiet.
I didn't get a chance to report out yet on the University Benefits Committee, but Mary, when I was in a meeting a couple weeks ago, it sounds like, I don't think I called last name. Thank you. So just so everybody knows, when they did that open enrollment season, they had 42 meetings across the university, and probably about 1,000 people attend them. And from everyone, no, it went well. I think it's awesome to be able to do that as a
nobody likes to change those benefits.
But most people were staying in the house now because it's what they had chosen.
Mm-hmm.
We actually looked at the plans. The new plan offerings were actually better. So it just took time. And when people sat down and invested just the time, I think they were really fine with the alternatives that they wanted to choose from. So it turned out okay.
Yeah, that was really good. And one thing I want to tell you guys is that, you know, like at Walmart, let's just use Walmart as a bad example. So they don't have employees work 30 hours a week to get health care. But Cornell is very progressive, as Paul mentioned, in the health side,
mm-hmm.
but also being eligible for health care for 20 hours per week after 6 months, I think it is. So, I don't know. Just maybe because I'm only my year two at Cornell and I happen to sit on the benefits committee. You know, it's really impressive to see how progressive Cornell is. Is there any downside to anything? I haven't heard anything.
So the part-time actually hurts us in the healthcare reform.
Because that's what I was
trying to decide what we're going to do about that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they actually penalize employers that did benefits for part-time. So the way the healthcare reform is written.
Yeah.
The way it's written is by the amount earned. So the fact that we offer to part-timers without any kind of proration requirement hurts us. And we treat a part-timer like a full-timer, but most people don't. So the fact that they earn half the pay, but we treat them like a full-time employee, it looks like they only earn that much money. So it looks like they're low. That looks like that's all they earn, not like they earn that for 50%. So we end up getting gains under the health plan, under the health care reform. So we're trying to figure out what to do about that. it's bizarre. And we'd be fine if we started health care at 30 hours. But because we started at 20, we actually get hurt. Yes. Right. I think that's an unintended consequence, but I'm not sure. So. And the other area that we're worried about is what to do with our retirees, especially our under 65 active retirees, whether we should be sending them out to the exchanges or what we should be doing. Obviously, not going to do that kind of thing, but they're a very expensive group. Medicare is, there's plans now to cover them. They're driving the cost of health care up.
Mary, can you give us a sense of how many of the employees fall into the 20 hours part time that we're covering?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of part time employees,
mm-hmm.
and providing health care to them is an important part of their health care plan. And there's a group of people that's likely to change, but we have to figure out what to do. It's like our retirees. You just don't dump people off of health care, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the exchanges are meant for these. I mean, there's ways that you can transition people to the exchanges. So the exchanges are meant for people in these circumstances. So you can do this in a way where they end up whole. But I just don't. I have to think these things through. I can't do things like these kind of changes quickly. As I get older, I'm slower. Make sure that they're actually equitable. Mm-hmm. I can't do them quick. Because, once you've done it, you can't undo it. It's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, just trying to figure out through and through. I just know that the cost of healthcare is eating into our available pool of dollars. Every year, we have less and less available for salary increases, for everything else. And it's not changing. That doesn't seem to be changing.
with the data set, we're so big though that we're self-funded, we don't have any stop loss insurance and that, so that it doesn't matter, all these nickel and dime claims, they're still going to need a letter.
Well, yeah,
utilization
but
is not
being
enough.
Self-funded, I mean, that still works for advantage. So, I mean, that's very much to our advantage, but, you know, a bad year is harmful, but still not nearly as much as if we were a contract. If we were on contract, we'd be nailed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the new budget model and how what you think that will do?
No, I barely understand it. So the way, to the extent I understand it, although I would strongly encourage you to invite Ken Cross here to talk about it, because I think that the more people who discuss it, the better. So responsibility-centered management, RCM, the concept behind it is that you're held accountable for your revenue and your operating costs, and that's the basic concept. And you externalize your costs and are held responsible for them. I lived under a form of RCM at Harvard, and it has some distinct upsides and some, I have some concerns about it that you have to be careful about. So in colleges, you know, the sense of it is that, you know, the tuition dollars are more mostly aligned to the direct mission, and they can see and direct their, you know, their funding there, and the support services are the central funds. The central services are then allocated dollars based on the relevancy of their work. So the concept is that you have less float, and that's the concept behind it. And if it's done correctly, I think it can have that effect. There's a lot of checks and balances they have to be put in place to make sure that actually happens. So at Harvard, which was an each tub on its own bottom university, it had that effect at the center of the university. But every college mirrored and repeated administration. So every college had an exact replica of the administration of the center. Exactly.
I guess that automatically makes me think that it's going to make people operate even mentally a lot more separate than one.
It tends to increase decentralization of certain things if you don't set it up in such a way that it requires more integration. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that Ken and the dean need to work against when they set up the governance structure. What it does is it places the dean and the provost at the center of the university, making, you know, clearer that they really are the leadership of the organization, that the colleges and the that they lead the university. The mission of the organization is to change. That's the concept. So it's hard to argue that, right? But if you're not careful in how you set it up, it can have unintended consequences, and you're aware of that. It's just that it's very complex to actually put the concept of it into play when you run a huge, multifaceted organization that is interdependent in the way that it runs, right? And you can't. The colleges can't run all by themselves, right? Like, we're trying to build something and not have any nails. Right? It'll all fall down. I mean, you still need the stuff that connects things in between, right? That stuff is important. I mean, nails all by themselves don't create anything, but walls can't hold up if you don't have nails. So it's all interdependent. And So the budget model is a way of thinking, an approach of thinking about accountability, but it still requires everyone to have respect for the fact that the organization is a holistically run reliant on one another. And the old model was very complex, and some felt as though you couldn't find the accountabilities in it, and that in the absence of the accountabilities, there was not a clear focus on the core mission. I think that gets
changed. I'm changing this from perhaps like who was responsible for student aid and
right. So some things I think are more clarified, like how the funding is set for where how the funding gets for financial aid gets taken care of, and the way that raw tuition is covered. Things that have just been a job to the university.
So we'll cover a lot of that with overview of it tomorrow.
And some of it they don't have completely.
They came to the UA meeting, and one of the concerns that came up within that group was the fact that each school will get tuition dollars based on student enrollment and whatnot. And then the question of the humanities and the classes that may be smaller, because a lab, like a science class with a lab, would basically get credit for that one student, but not for the class and the lab, it counts as one. Where a humanities class that just is a class and doesn't need as many resources still counts as that same one. So there was a lot of concerning question on how we would safeguard all of those humanities classes, in relation to the sciences, saying, the humanities doesn't need as much, but yes, they're getting the same money as the sciences that need a lot more to keep running. And there was concern about, would we start losing those classes because they just become too expensive to run and we need the money elsewhere.
Some of these issues suggest a precision in the model that don't actually exist, and it's because we're talking about the model as a model. This actually washes out when you take the model down and you actually allocate the dollars. But because we're still at the model level, it seems like it actually will matter. But when the dollars get allocated, it really doesn't. Issues that you don't know yet.
Yeah.
I mean, part of it is we it's like the devil, We all know how to work inside this crazy model we have now, which if you look at it, is absolutely ridiculous. It's the craziest funding model. It's just nuts. But everybody knows how to work inside of all of this absurdity. So you go, ridiculous, and nobody likes it, but I hate it, but I know it. This is all new. So you take it down to its finest thread, and you go, that really scares me. And that really scares me. But the reality is, when you grade it all up, it's a lot more sensible, and a lot of these details will just wash out in the grading, and it'll be a lot more sensible, and it'll kind of wash itself. That's how it was. I mean, that's how this basically worked. And then the big stuff that didn't work, they had like calibrators on either side of it. Like they kept the pot of money over here and the pot of money over here. And when it didn't work, they used the pot of money and they calibrated it.
Other questions, please? Craig?
One of the things we're going to talk about a little later, get your sort of feedback and thoughts on is, in response to the employee engagement survey, college or unit level responses, and what the different departments on campus, colleges or units, are being required to provide in terms of feedback, response, action items, follow-up, follow-through, what, if any, are they being asked or required to submit essentially?
Yeah, not much. So, Tanya and I talked a little bit about this. So, my area is a pretty good example. I was dealing with the college kids. We talk a lot at the university level, and then we're down to our area, we're not so great. I think that the momentum on the staff survey is waning, so it probably could stand a shot. There's something like the recognition program is going breakdowns, and then when we got the recommendations that'll get another shot in the arm. But at the unit level, some of them got going and they've got committees and they're working. Others really never got off the ground. So it probably could use a little urgency for some of their locals. It's just the way it is. I mean, this is a place that moves quickly, and the next new urgent crisis, we're sort of a crisis-oriented place. The nature of a residential place. You go from urgent to urgent to urgent, and the important, unfortunately, sits below the urgent and gets lost sometimes, and you've got to get that happening.
So what's the appropriate delivery mechanism for that shot in the arm?
So I'm a big fan of the resolution because it's the thing you have that nobody else has.
Okay.
You know, it's what you've got. It's the power that you have of your independence because it requires a response. And when you use it, it's like, pay attention to it. I mean, we're going to be responding to the report, but that's at the university level. And I have to say, we talk about it at HR Council. It's just that if it never got off the ground. So at HR Council, you talk to the ones that have something going on. It never got off the ground. The people, the colleges and units that never got anything off the ground just don't have anything to say.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things, too, that sort of sparked this interest in me was, you know, we had a consultant come into the hotel school and had dialogue and had these feedback sessions. Heard nothing about it since.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, is it at the bottom of somebody's pile when it should be probably at the top? And really no follow-up or further communication about it. So it's like, it almost seems sort of like that, oh, we're just going to have somebody come in, listen to you, so you feel better, like we did something, and then nothing actually comes of it.
Yep. So here's my analysis of that. I'm starting my decision sort of the same way. If you have a problem to fix, you fix it. So in my division, police had a mess on this one in the physical space. We were like, ooh, I can test that one. So we went over and fixed that. The rest of the stuff we talked about was like really amorphous. You know, it would be nice if we did this, or we went, yeah, that would be really nice. And they're all sitting in somebody's good intention box. It's not that they got forgotten. They're just not getting left to them. Right? The stuff in the police was like, look, I can do that. I can paint that. I can replace that. I can do that. I can do those things. I can get actionable items. And so, in places that put committees together, staff committees, not HR committees, staff committees together, where the staff are meeting and just working those issues through talking, figuring out, keeping them going, they're inching those issues along. Because they're climate issues. There isn't a thing. It's not a desk or a chair. It's climate. It's the stuff that you just inch along. And it's not HR, it's more than HR. Climate is involvement, it's slower, it's ongoing. And the places that don't have committees that are meeting, that have a life beyond HR, they're not moving. They're just there.
How much of those climate sort of change issues do you see needing to be sparked from the top down? You know, because if David makes a statement, you know, to Kent, and then Kent makes it to the deans, and it becomes a priority, you know, significantly for them, and part of their, you know, job performance, their evaluation, their renewals, all those sorts of things, you might, because, you know, I've seen initiatives roll down, and our deans take it really seriously, and there's a lot of action, a lot of people behind it, and, you know, so how much of that needs to start with senior leadership, those sort of cultural changes and climate changes? And when, if at all, are those going to be taking place?
Well, I think you have to put some thought into what you want your resolution to be. That's what I think. For there to be something coming from the president, you have to be fairly clear about what you want the president to do. I'm not debating. I'm actually saying that I think he tends to respond pretty precisely to what the resolution says.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did a lot with the survey data, directly to the dean, directly to the vice president, on multiple occasions. I did it. And I feel like I pushed this myself pretty far. And I got as far as you see. So for it to go farther, I think it needs a different approach.
Yeah. And I just want to clarify, you know, by no means is there anything with the work that you already draw.
I'm not being defensive.
Yeah, no,
I don't take this as a criticism at all. What I'm saying is you see how far the sort of institutionalized efforts have gotten. So to get it farther, you have to stand back and think about what you've asked him to do. Because what we got so far has been an institutionalized response. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you got. You got HR going to the dean, HR going to the vice president, and I did that on multiple occasions. Then they dispatched it to their college officers and their business officers and their HR. Right? That's an institutionalized response. And it was top down. President supported it, provost supported it. That was a top down approach. So I would just be thoughtful about whether that way, it'll move it a little bit more that way. So that's one way of doing it. I would just think about other ways to craft the resolution. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not actually leading you somewhere. I'm just telling you what happened up until now.
I appreciate that.
Because I do think, and I said this directly to Tanya and Bridget, the staff put a lot of honesty and effort into writing their answers to that survey. I think we owe them everything we have in answering it and trying to move these issues forward. There's still a lot of work to be done. And you're right, to really make a difference on the climate stuff, that comes from the top, more than it does. So, and I also think, by the way, HR has to do more, and I think all of you have to do more, and I think they have to do more. So, it's everybody's got to push a little harder and keep just a little bit more on this phone than we have. But on the climate issues, it comes from, you know, and it's a big deal how we treat each other on this campus. It makes all of the other stuff easier to handle. How we deal with problems, how we handle issues, how we talk about things, how we...
But there's no evaluation to see how the deans and VCs responded.
So that's, you know, potentially what our resolution would ask for.
So when you think about your resolution, that's certainly a piece, but I would be thoughtful about what you put in your resolution. So an evaluation of how far they've gone is a dead end aspect of the resolution. So you can certainly ask for it and you'll get it. But that doesn't move the needle. It just gives you a report. Right? So maybe you should ask for it. But if your goal is to actually get investment to change the culture, then don't stop it. I don't want that. It's certainly a piece you might want to get. But what you really want to do is keep the pressure on the climate and think about how to make that happen. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It's not for lack of trying. I mean, there are a couple of people I think that could have cared less, honestly, and actually said that. you know, it's a great place to work. I don't know what people are complaining about. You know, some people are curmudgeons. Get over it. They're everywhere. Probably true, but so some people just said that. But most people did not. Most people were really appreciative of the data they got. They were really curiously. They had all the right intentions. And, you know, just then their eyes averted over here to this places, and then over here to this place, and over here to this place. So it's not an issue of lack of will or lack of interest.
I have one other question for you, Mary, because we only have like a minute left, but I don't know if you can say this yet, but ship this year, maybe? Well, next year, technically.
Sorry. I do not believe my family wants to know. We have seven children, and my daughter, who's just a tenant at the moment, and my husband, are you okay if we watch just one more? We will have a sip. It will be modest. But we will have one. My goal. It will be a modest step. We're trying to encourage some differentiation on the basis of facility for those who are taking on additional work. But yeah, I mean that, you know, the reality that this is the reality we're living under, right? I am very worried about growing back the size of the payroll and finding us those that where we work. To be completely candid with you, that's a fear I live in, because we're starting to grow back the size of the staff a little bit, because we dropped down so small, and now people are finding that they're having trouble getting the work done. And I'm nervous. I think we need to do that. I think there are places where we probably drop down. That's where we need to be. But until I am comforted that we have a revenue stream to cover those lines, I don't want to find, I'm not doing this again. I'm not. I'll leave. I can't. I can't. I don't think I've ever done anything that was more personally jarring than 2010. It was the worst 2009. Income. It was horrible. And so until I know that what we pay, we can afford, you know, it's going to be like this, I think, here and everywhere else. And honestly, we are really struggling with the cost of benefits. Health benefits. They are eating up a large portion of what we're doing. Total compensation is a reality everywhere, and we are having a hard time getting out from under this. Double, triple inflation. You know, and although everyone sees what the rate they pay, I'm still subventing more than what we're passing on. So it used to be, if you saw six, we paid six. I've paid more than the part we passed on for years, and now I've blown through the reserve I had. I've blown through everything because I'm trying to cover more than that, because the SIPs have been so small, I feel like I can't pass on the full cost. So when we used to cover 98% and 75%, we're covering more like 91% and, you know, 77%. I can't continue to do that. It's like our spend rate is going to be up over 37% pretty soon, making us uncompetitive for a research grant. So pretty soon, you know, the stuff comes back around us. So we got to do something about healthcare, because that's where the money's going, and it's not hard to put. Aren't you really glad you invited me here?
We are very fun. Well, I think I can.
That's a nice question.
Yeah,
I'm
going
to have
to. When you do a
my son comes home from the side of Seattle. what's everybody else going for?
I'm going to Long Island.
Yeah, the 24th is a nice addition,
isn't it? Wonderful addition. Wonderful.
Well, for those of us who are 24/7 people over 12, they don't get a special 12.
I think, Mary, I'll just say, you know, on behalf of the group that, you know, you've done some amazing leadership work for staff, and I've heard from various people around campus how you continue to say, be kind and be gentle to the staff and take care of them and all of that, and, you know, just the support that you gave at the survey and your continued pushing has really, I think, meant a lot to a lot of people. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Does anybody have a place for this dog? It's going well. They're continuing.
Oh, no.
I'm not taking this dog, but I need to text the no in large capital letters.
Thank you.
Good luck with that dog.
I'm fast reading it. Somewhere between 24 and 30 pounds.
Thank you. All right, so moving back into the rest of our agenda, can we take a look at the minutes from the last meeting, and does anybody have any changes, comments?
I have some minor changes to the education committee's report.
Sure.
Like December 11th instead of
December 11th. Okay. Anything else, just the date, or?
Want to end and increase income as a follow up to the EDC survey at the end of the past.
Okay,
Say that again, huh?
As a follow up to the EDC survey. So, at the end of last month. Any other comments or changes to the minutes? So I made a motion to accept the minutes with the changes given by Lavanya. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Great, thank you. The minutes are approved. Okay, you have 2 minutes. I have 2 minutes. Okay. So very quickly, the employee survey team met on Monday. Many of the different committees have been meeting and re-reviewing the proposals. Final proposals are due to the EST committee on January 7th. We will be meeting with Mary on January 16th, right before our EA meeting. At that point, she'll have all the proposals, be able to review them and get her feedback. We will then be hosting a variety of employee forums. Mary would like to be at those, but those will be EA-run forums, so I will be placing things on your calendar, and I really, really need people to be there to participate, because we're going to break out into focus groups, and I'm going to need people on the EA to lead them. We really clearly want this to be an EA-led initiative. Mary doesn't want it run by HR. We want it to be about the employees. So if everybody can, you know, plan to sign up and be there and participate, we're going to try to do them in different areas of campus. So if you have suggestions of campus right now, we're looking at central campus, like the G10 biotech meeting. Michelle, if you have an idea of somewhere we a big room in that, you know, the vet college or in that area, that would be great. We're looking at Appel Commons to hit that side of campus. But if there are other areas where we need to grab people, if folks can think about that, like if Joe, if you think it would warrant to go down to, I don't know
what the headcount is down there. I wonder.
You know, so that would be a question.
Okay.
what size room are you thinking about?
Well, I think we would want to think of a room that's at least, like, if potentially some subset of folks came from folks who work in Seneca Place, what do you think might come?
Yeah.
You know, if you think 50 people might come or 150, I mean, we just don't know.
Yeah.
We would definitely want to be a large size room. Like, I wouldn't want to do it in something like this. And if there's not any place...
I need to see that. Okay, I'll find out.
You would or you wouldn't?
I wouldn't. I would think that this would be too small. You know? No? Right. I'm just thinking of a place that, okay, if we had this many people we wanted to break out in subgroups, it's not that easy to do in this type of space, but we could, I mean, if that's the, those are the options are available, we'd rather hit places on campus than not. So, so that's kind of where we are with the employee survey team, and we've already gotten a couple of recommendations back. I don't know if, Leslie, if you want to quickly touch on the not wellness anymore, it's personal development.
Yeah, we're
and it's bolder. Beth, I guess, said that you're looking at a proposal for what would equate to 2.5 hours a week of release time for employees to do personal development. So that's kind of where they're heading. Supervisors Feedback Committee has looked at, there's an online Qualtrics feedback mechanism that is already being used in other areas. Campus, I think, that is currently using it, and some central HR units are using that. So the idea, their recommendation is that this would be a soft launch this year for people who want to take advantage of using it, that the tool will be available to everyone, but supervisors who want to take advantage of using it could use it, but in 2014, for next year's SIP process, it would be mandatory that every supervisor would have to be evaluated through this method. It's in Qualtrics. It's supervisor feedback. But what the idea would be, it's customizable, but there would be kind of a menu of options, of questions, and there would be a series of questions that everyone would have to ask, but then individual units could customize and say, okay, this really applies to us, so we're going to add this question in here. But there would be some specific metrics that would be measured everywhere on campus, and then your customized pieces. So that's kind of where they're going. Bridget, I don't know if you're, I know we've got recognition committee down there, but did the other committee meet?
The evaluation committee has met, and the feedback that we've received from the evaluation committee has met, and the feedback that we've received so far via email that everybody
was happy with our Any other committees?
Another question about, is the rebanding or getting rid of bands, is that part of any of these committees, or?
So that is a workday piece, but that is part of, I think that's part of, sort of part of your committee and sort of part of career options, but it's a work, more of a workday piece, I think, than anything else. Bridget?
Okay, so I started on that. Committee,
yep.
Which is alignment and change
tool,
and that's part of work-life balance initiative concern. I haven't actually read the proposal, but the recommendations are implement a lean process improvement thing,
mm-hmm.
which is like a strategy training called lean. How to do work,
communicate existing change tools, professional and personal development offerings, and solutions to manage workloads, to try to make people aware of what's already out there. And then C was the committee originally proposed that leaders put in gains in excellence for higher education facilitated by Brent Rubin. This is still an open option. The committee supports leaders contacting Brent. But C needs a little benefit in promoting that option with this proposal. So whatever that means, I don't know.
Thank you. Leadership breakfast, we had David Scorton there. It was pretty quiet, to say the very least of those of us who were there. It was a lot of story sharing because everyone, I think, was a little tired and not really asking questions. So I don't think anybody asked the question. Yeah. So not too much came out of the leadership breakfast. Moving into old business, so the CARE Fund, we had last spoken at our last meeting when Beth was here about the CARE Fund, and I think we kind of got off on ideas or, you know, things that we can do to fundraise. I don't want to do that now. What I would like to do is to talk about, does the EA want to be a fundraising committee? Do we want to have a fundraising committee to support the CARE Fund? So do people have thoughts on that?
I'm not in favor of that only because the things are too, it's so specialized and so much time and effort. And as Beth pointed out, if you have a committee that's already stressed through another committee, it needs to do it right and to serve it right. You know, development people should be on it from different parts of the school and people that have an affinity or maybe recipients of that fund, pay it forward.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily saying that this group would be that committee, but it would be similar to like our education committee or our personnel policy committee, that we would have a lead from the EA, but the committee would be all over campus or similar to the United Way committees, where there's liaisons from all over campus to support that.
The leaders of the United States.
No.
We're not. It falls into the same category. Mm-hmm. Because it's sort of like a charity. And if we choose one that we're going to support, then are we selective when we choose not to set up another one?
Well, I think that the distinction in this particular charity is that the charity is employees of Cornell. I mean, we're feeding it back into the employees. It's not, you know, I would be hard pressed to see us do a committee where we pick and choose charities around the community, but because this, I think the reason why, and initially the program started, and the reason why it started is because it was for employees. So, you know, the employees fund it, that sort of thing.
But the yield of this last year, according to that, the numbers are really low. So what I'm concerned about is the affinity, you want it to do well, but if it fails, and that's the worst case scenario, how much onus, I mean, we don't even have, we're not even the body that even approves and looks at the applicant. I guess for being an employee base, it's already removed from this, but I almost, this is just me, again, my opinion.
Okay.
I'd rather not have my hand in it if I can't really control it. I mean, you're asking for involvement of funding, but yet, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like a good scenario, but I need some other perspective.
I'm not
on the committee.
I do see the application that comes in.
So you're selected because you're on the assembly or because of...
I think we need to go back to... Because we started, the EA started the
book,
and we managed it and everything. The thing was, we really weren't getting any applications for those criteria that were stringent, and that was something we had talked about. And moved it over to some of the criteria to be better developed and create a committee and everything. And I think when we transferred it over, did we document how what our affiliation would still be?
Yes, the affiliation was that we would have an EA member appointed to that committee.
And didn't we say something about helping to continue with some of this motion of it? Some more that we had committed to the committee. I'm just trying to remember what that document said, because I thought we might want to revisit that?
Yeah, I think, I don't remember, I could go back and look at what the resolution was, because that was 4 years ago now. But I think, I don't think I see a lack of commitment in continuing to support and to promote it and that sort of thing. I think it's the question of, do we think the EA body should be the primary fundraising organization to raise funds for this program? Greg?
I guess one of my questions is there anybody around here that wants to own it? You know what I mean? Is there a person that wants to be a champion for this committee, because it's going to have to be one of us that probably chairs the committee?
Yep.
You know, and we can group think and say it's good for the EA aesthetically to have this, but if nobody's going to take the ball and score a touchdown, then it's really sort of a
point. Something about the EA doesn't do it, who's going to?
That's my question.
Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want the program to go away.
No, but I think we should also look at, you know, instead of how to fundraise, what is the program, and how do we challenge the university to make a stronger commitment to this, and some of the things we discussed last week, and looking and say, hey, you know, Mary, make this an advancement priority for your department to sort of raise and turn down funds for some things like this. So we don't really have to worry about the fundraising, you know, let Charlie and his team, you know, go out there and get some money, and it always is trying to go forward.
But I think it comes back to the fact that we still would need someone or someone in this group to stand up and be that point person and say, we got to go to Mary, and yeah, we're not going to sit here and plan the bake sales and the auction or whatever, but we're going to go out there and make those contacts across campus and get all those people invested. Somebody has to be the start of doing that, and right now there's nobody. Excuse me? Oh?
What would historically happen that the fundraising fell onto one person? Because I think that everyone in the room here would put it back down into the ground.
That's
been the only fundraising for, other than the send out messages, but that wasn't the one person that the team that helped saying it. He would put money out of the paycheck. But because we did the online auction in the way it fell on one person, because one person had a chance to enter the stuff in. I mean, there were people on here that collected the items for the auction, so that didn't fall on one person, but it's one person that.
Somebody has to do that piece, and then I think the thing that's really hard is, you know, okay, you and me, did anybody else, you know, go out there and pick up the phone and call people for donations, you know? So I think that's really hard. You're putting, essentially, you know, there were five people who were out there. If you have a committee and say, okay, you know, we need a lot of people to go out there and outreach. We just need more people are more
open. They had the items. They had them on the website.
I would throw out there that we should be supportive to the Care Fund Committee in terms of, looking at resolutions and sort of, you know, because, you know, Mary made the point, you know, resolutions need responses.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at using our body and sort of our mechanism to say we'll support this to the various departments, you know, through resolutions, through those sorts of things, for certain initiatives. And maybe we devote a meeting where we have the Care Fund Committee come in the spring and we use that as sort of a brain searching thing,
mm-hmm.
and see if something comes of that we spark a resolution that we want to send to David and Mary and something like that. I think that, you know, that's probably a better first step rather than assuming ownership right away.
Is it a possible?
Yes.
So ready for tax time,
Clinton just said around the came out on an email right before we came down, one of the things, one of the first things we mentioned was the care fund.
Yeah, I saw that.
Care fund. So he's trying to get more stuff out there.
So just in the interest, because I'm sensing that the majority of folks around the room think that the EA taking ownership of a fund, care fund fundraising committee, is not the way to go, but we do not want to do that. Can I have a show of hands of who thinks we should not do that? Okay.
I think
it's worth
soon
enough. Okay.
Yeah, I don't mind at all actually helping out and run with it, but I don't want to be the guy doing the bake sale down at the dollar. I'm more than happy to talk to development, other units, go to Mary, talk about a program like they're doing. It's, you know, I want to donate 5 vacation days back to this fund. They give 50 cents a dollar in cash. I mean, there's ideas to do that. I just don't want to be the one in the field looking on the website, you know.
Budget.
So it's 125, and, you know, we still have some items, and it's our last meeting of the year. I move that we extend the meeting by 15 minutes.
Okay, so let's table this then. We will put this back on the agenda. Joe, I like your ideas, and you know what I'm really looking for is to say, okay, do we have a person? And you sound like someone who could potentially be invested in saying, let me spin these ideas and not say I'm going to play on the auction, but someone who's going to say, these are some things that we should look at, these are some people we should talk to, and be that strategic
leader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
As long as we could find a manpower pool to start a trial, new trial committee, as I said, it's going to be a...
Right. I know what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
I wanted to ad hoc, ad hoc.
Ad hoc.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. On to EA elections. Did you have, or can we, EA elections, there's going to be something in the paw print. There are flyers getting prepared, right? Okay. And I know Curtis has emailed everyone about those whose term is ending, if you're going to run again. So when he returns, we'll have an update on that. Just a point of clarification, everyone whose term is not up this year is a member of the Elections Committee.
Yeah.
It's not optional. You are the Elections Committee. You are the
Elections Committee. Again, I just got on. Do I have to run again?
No, you have a 2-year term.
The wording was, it was like, yeah.
You,
okay.
So, a little clarification there. Linda, Deputy Senate,
yeah.
Do you want to talk about that now, or do you want
to? I wanted to quickly acknowledge that one of the things I thought was most impressive in the past, she said to me that I did want to be an update on the question that very often is an update on faculty work life. And she said maybe the first class was the time that she was given to talk about some specific things that we work with faculty work life survey. And she spent about the second half sharing the staff employee survey results with the faculty who were sitting there and made a very well-spoken plea to them to try to be more supportive and helpful to the staff. And I was just so appreciative and blown away that this time she was giving to the faculty, she spent that time really talking about the staff. And what was really refreshing to see is a lot of the faculty members were very engaged in the data she presented from the staff survey, and they asked her if they could get additional information on the staff survey as well. So I was blown away that she chose to spend her time that way, and just continuing to hopefully start to break down some of those barriers that we have talked about between faculty and staff. And I was just really blown away with her that she did that.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you, Linda.
I believe they are posted online, but after they're adopted at the next meeting, so that only happens once a month, so it's they're available more than a month after the meeting happens.
That's why I could find them.
If you go to the universityfaculty.cornell.edu, I think there's somewhere on that.
Okay. Yeah, I tried to get that, but
can we take that piece off the slide just because I want to get to our last two quick items? Very quickly, so the resolution request for employee survey data, so that's kind of what Greg was talking about before. And I think, Greg, you said you would take point on trying to craft something potentially. Okay, so if you want to put them together and then toss it out for feedback, that would be great. I'm assuming folks are probably generally supportive of that idea.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Bridget.
All right. What I have got from around for sure with each of you is the staff recognition committee is going to be doing a breakfast type open house thing on January 15th. They are looking for people to, or members from the EA, to be at each location if at all possible. We'll see the locations there and the approximate time.
What's the
point? So to try to make staff aware, so one of thank staff for their hard work and all of that, and give them like a granola bar or donuts or something like that, and also to make them aware of the recognition committee, so the efforts that are out there to try to.
So there is a recognition committee member in
I believe there, after this list, there will be,
Right, well, I'm just wondering, because I know people are asking, if you meet a member there, and they're like, well, what's going on with the recognition committee? Do we need to be here? Or
there should be, from this list, there's a couple locations that they do not have a team member at yet, but they are trying to fill them still. So if anybody is interested in tagging along with a committee member, let me know, and I can pass them along.
When and where is the January 13th meeting?
So this isn't a meeting. These are events that are all over campus. So if you can see, like, the Cal, they'll have someone in Robert Hall mezzanine.
There's going to be at the vet school in the tag room. The breakfast will be delivered at approximately around 7:30, so we'll need somebody there.
Mm-hmm. So all the breakfasts are the same day?
Yeah.
And we just need somebody from here to help
the eat. I mean, if one person picks up a location from where they are on campus,
and then what do they do when they get there?
You're just basically going to be there and hand out like a donut or the granola bar, say hi to people. If members from the EA are willing just to be there to support the recognition committee and see if.
Come on, Joe, you want to hand out a donut?
Friends that you have the EA, that you want to bring your questions, we can help from being on the EA.
What's the allotted time for the event?
They're thinking probably not much longer than a half hour to an hour, I'm thinking.
It's trying to capture people as they walk into the office in the morning to start their day. And what they're really trying to do is to thank employees. So they're red days, recognizing employee days. And it's part of this whole new initiative they're putting forward. And there was a small trial of one last month, and they're looking to do these more frequently. Yeah. Yeah. They do. They have those things. That's what they did for the first one. Greg? What? Okay. Bridget, Greg's down for Saturday. I mean for Statler. Greg's down for Statler.
I got time to play.
And Joe's got East Hill. Look at that.
No donuts, though. They're helping.
They gave out apples last time. He said Seneca said.
Yeah.
They're doing donuts this time. There will be other things. They're trying to be inclusive to people who don't eat healthy. Who do you eat healthy?
I do have one just comment on this. This is something we were pretty passionate about at the Statler when Joe reached out to us.
This is a time of year where we lay off a lot of food service employees, Cornell Dining, all those sorts of things, and we're sending these dollars out to the community when we have folks here that are looking for work and could produce some of these, you know, baked items, and we're having it catered by somebody else. I think in the future we should sort of consider those seasonal employees and employees that we do have on campus that are able to do that work. Because you know, we really took a seriously aggressive, you know, basically lower than cost approach to make sure that we could keep it in house, because we felt that it was important, if we're recognizing folks in our area, that it was work that we were providing to people.
I think that's a great point, and I will pass that along, or Bridget, you can pass that along.
But I think it's fantastic that we're doing it. I think we have to think about.
No, I think that's important.
All that money going out to the community when we're laying off, you know, hundreds of people.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. I think that is all we have. I'll just throw out there that April 3rd, David and Mary are coming. And lastly, in light of the different things that we want to talk more about, the CARE Fund and, you know, this resolution stuff, do we want to try and see if we can find time? I know we canceled a January 2nd meeting. Do we want to find another time to have an hour-long meeting or something to talk about those things so we can move them forward sometime in early January? Okay. Then I will try and put some options out.
Well, I can take care of them offline and run with it. He's fascinating now. Or the gym and everybody.
I think that's fine. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, guys. Have a happy holiday. A happy or miserable, whatever you want, as Stephen said.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.